Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath.
This is Barry Wheeler, consultant here at BrightPath.
In today's episode, we're going to talk about the idea of making yourself important in these as leaders in these fields around resilience that we focus on here, security, crisis management, business continuity, intelligence, crisis communications. And I'll start off by saying I had a friend in my previous company for kind of grew up together in the organization. We were close friends. Kind of fell out a little bit and got back, kind of came back into each other's circles when he was fighting cancer. And unfortunately, the person I'm talking about, Josh Harden, died in 2011. But Josh had a couple different sayings, and one of them was that as a leader in the security world, and that's what we were doing at the time, that you have to find ways to make yourself important, that you have to be willing to make yourself important. And he always illustrated that through a story about you can't wait for your ticket to the dance. You just have to show up.
Sure.
Which is really a very Josh way of saying that you need to make yourself important, that you need to be willing to go out and kind of proactively engage. And I would say, as you know, I've spent almost 30 years now in this field. I would say that there's a lot of times I see leaders who, you know, yes, we're all in support functions, but we're also in very important support functions.
Right.
And in a lot of cases that we're not willing to dance, we're not willing to go out there and put ourselves out and be aggressive in an appropriate way about advocating for what we need in terms of resources and personnel and doing the right thing by your team. I mean, those kind of things are hard. And I think sometimes we think, well, I'm a support function, so I'm just going to hide here in my corner and no one will bother me. And that's no way to move your company forward, or to advance the careers of your team, or do the right thing by your organization.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's hard enough when you're a profit center for an organization to go make requests for resources and capital and all that other stuff. It's really hard when it's a support function, because mm-hmm. you almost feel guilty walking into those conversations going, I need resources. I need this to help. And I think part of that complexity there is a lot of the stuff is it's not organic mm-hmm. business type things that people in the organization intrinsically get. It's real hard. It's kind of, it's niche kind of specialty things that once you kind of get it aren't hard, but it on the surface kind of looking in, it can be a little intimidating on their part, and mm-hmm. thereby, well, do we really need it, or how important is it, or you know, that kind of stuff. But we all know who's probably listening to this podcast, this stuff is real important. You should make it real important.
And in doing so, you should make yourself important. I see this a lot in two specific disciplines. I see this in what I would think of as kind of general security, corporate security endeavors. And I see this just as much in business continuity, where leaders think about, leaders simultaneously complain about not having the things that they want or need, or not getting the respect they think they deserve in the organization, and then at the same time not being willing to engage in the things you need to do in order to obtain those resources.
Right.
Right. I mean, if I feel like that comes up, a lot. I think we've just made some of this too complicated. I think one of my common sayings that I got from my wife's friend, Fred Klopetsky, who she used to work with at Ernst & Young, Fred would say, you know, business continuity is not rocket science. And as a leader in business continuity, your challenge is not deciphering the rocket science, but it's really about how do you market this internally to your organization to make it important. And in doing so, you're making yourself important.
To demonstrate the value of what it brings to that business process, that function of the company, to the company itself.
Mm-hmm. I remember early in my career at our previous organization where, man, I couldn't have been with the company for a year yet. I was in a retail store, and I was in a security function, plainclothes security function. You know, my job was to catch shoplifters,
sure,
and deter other kinds of incidents. And morning huddle before the store opened, the leader on duty was like, "Hey, we're having a visit today from," I want to say the guy's name was Fred something, but he was like the ops specialist for the region, and he's going to be looking at some things. And I walked up to her later and I go, "I'll do my best to be out of the way." And she goes, "No, you should meet Fred. Fred is a good leader. Fred will take an interest in you. And how else are you going to learn how this company works? If you're hiding because you think that he's not interested because you work in security, you would both be wrong. And that would not be the right thing for your career. Like, you need to know this guy."
Sure.
You know what? She was right. Fred was interested, had advice, and had a number of other, there were a number of other things I learned in that interaction, but my initial response was, "Well, yeah, I should just go hide in the office."
Right.
It's like, this is what I'm talking
about. I'll stay out of the way.
I'm the security guy.
I'll stay out of the way.
No, I made myself important because Teresa told me I should make myself important.
Well, it really is, you know, in order to advance the things that, the work that you're doing, people have to know who you are. They need to know you're a resource. They need to know you're not only you, but your team as well, and stressing kind of the importance of your team within the organization. You know, if you're fortunate to have a couple people helping support some of these functions, in a lot of cases there's, you know, it's a one person shop, but if you do have other components, even if it's down to the hourly person in the op center, you're putting a face, you're putting some known entities, people are more likely to gravitate towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And putting yourself out there is huge to start drawing that interest in that business. And really it's not about you. It's about what your function can do for the organization and do for other people, rather than waiting until they're coming to find you because they need something.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause most of the time they're only going to do that. You know, they're only going to come find you when it benefits them or they need something.
Right. I mean, I see this a lot. I think earlier in my career, it took me a while to really understand this and have the confidence to be willing to do the things that I think you need to do to make yourself important. But I remember this kind of pivotal moment watching something happen in front of my eyes that I wouldn't have done because I didn't think of the business in this way. But we were at a regional meeting in Nashville, Tennessee, and we were at a mixer, one of those mixers you don't really have anymore where there's alcohol and that kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't know, there's a couple hundred of us in this courtyard area at the hotel that the event was at. And I was talking with my boss, and he watched his boss walk over, and who was from a different part of the company, had never really worked in our area. And he went over and started talking with the senior vice president for our region, and then went over and sat in the corner, and they had a drink together privately and were chatting for quite a while. And you could tell that it was just this interesting interaction between somebody that, you know, ran the whole business for a fourth of the organization and somebody who was new at the director level but had never worked in that region before, talking. And I was fascinated by this interaction because he was, you know, two levels above me, but I was never like, I was like, I'm never going to have that kind of confidence where I could walk over and have that conversation. But what that individual was doing was he was making himself important. He was seeking advice from a senior leader. He was trying to understand the region and what was going on. And I only know this because I later asked him,
sure,
about this interaction in a kind of mentoring conversation we were having. That guy that did that, by the way, is now the CEO of Lowe's. It was Marvin Ellison, who CEO at JCPenney, president at Home Depot, previous VP of security at Home Depot. Prior to that was at Target.
Yeah, I don't know Marvin personally, but I know a lot of people who knew him and kind of came up through the ranks in this organization. And it very much sounds like his MO to go out there and share that story. And I think if you follow him on social media and things like that, he's still doing that kind
still
of stuff.
Kind of even his approach. Yeah.
Even at that top level of putting himself out there and kind of sharing his story and understanding what other people's stories are to, you know, to make the organization better and to understand kind of what's going on. And I think that's kind of the flip side of that too, is if you're a leader of one of these functions, make sure that you're making kind of those functions important, but also advocating as well back within the organization as, mm-hmm. hey, these are people you guys should go meet. You know, my team is working on some stuff and here's what they can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're not doing that, you're probably not the best leader in the organization, but it's important to remember to kind of share that story rather than waiting for a problem to arise to demonstrate the value or sharing those things, like waiting until you have to have these conversations. The right. more proactive you are, I think, is really kind of where we're getting to, is the more proactive you are,
mm-hmm.
the better off your organization's going to be and that function is going to be to support the broader org.
As consultants, I feel like, you know, when we're working inside of an organization, we have a little bit of immunity to the corporate political game at that company that goes on, because we're really getting paid to be very straightforward with our advice and observations and recommendations. But I can't, I think there's been countless number of times, even this year, where we've been working with different clients, and at the heart of some of the challenges, we would hear something like, well, I can't drive that. I can't push that person because, you know, they're a business leader and they're not going to want to listen to little old me.
Right.
And we're like, but you need to push that team, that person, this initiative, because it is important, because it is, as you've defined, the right thing to do to advance your strategies, and your strategies are tied to the strategic objectives of the organization, and they are therefore important. And you, in a lot of cases, they'll have the senior leadership support to do the things that they need to put in place, but they can't knock down the barriers that are in the way and in the middle,
right?
You know, middle management kind of challenges, and be willing to push.
Well, yeah, and that becomes the part of the art to the science of all of it, is trying to figure out who those kind of key partners are and making sure that they are your partners and that they're not seeing you, and you're trying to not see them as the obstacle. And it's one of those things, kind of your point just a second ago, is you almost, in the most professional, business appropriate kind of way, you almost need to stay in their face. You need to stay in their face until you've come to some sort of resolution of where that value is, or where the issue is, or where that problem that needs to be solved is. And really it's about solving the problem rather than, again, kind of back to making yourself important. It really is, how do you solve the problems for the organization? And if you're not trying to knock those walls down, if you're not trying to build those bridges, after you've knocked the wall down, you're not doing your job, and it's not going to be as effective in terms of the benefits and the outcomes that you're seeking with some of the stuff. Because again, this is support, critical support functions to the organization that need to take place, but aren't going to be seen probably as such, you know, in just reality, because they're not typically profit centers.
Right.
You know,
I mean, we talked before, I think in a couple episodes ago, about how do you get support for things that you want to do. And we talked a little bit about quantitative and qualitative benefits, mm-hmm. of doing some things. These areas are almost never profit centers to an organization, but we should not let that be the barrier to seeking the kind of resources and tools, software, capital, et cetera, to do the job the way that your company has hired you to do the job, and advance those things for your team. I remember arguing once for business continuity software, and the way it worked is that you went into a big capital prioritization meeting for technology projects, and there were representatives from all the business and support teams there. Like, my boss was a person that sat at the table, And there, you know, I don't know, there were probably 16, 17 people in the room in addition to everyone else that was presenting.
Sure.
And then a bunch of IT leaders whose job it was to put obstacles in front of pretty much everything. And I presented for business continuity software. The financial return on implementing this software was exactly zero. I mean, we were going to, it was a money losing proposition, but we were manually managing north of 200 business continuity plans and close to 150 plus disaster recovery plans using a home baked SharePoint tool. And so we went in and asked for this money. And the first year I asked for it, I didn't get it. I mean, you know, it was not an insignificant spend, but it wasn't a huge spend. And it came, and I went and met with our VP over IT stuff that supported our organization later and said, why didn't we get that? Well, the reason, Brian, is that we prioritized getting new price change software that was going to make the company $40 million in profit versus your money-losing BC tool. But come back.
Right.
So the next fiscal year, there I was. I got it that time. But, you know, again, it was the example of, I think this is a good example of the business case was stacked against it in terms of financial return, but it was the right thing to do that aligned with our strategic objectives. And so I wasn't going to be afraid of going in and presenting and representing my function and asking for the tools we need to do the job the way the company wanted me to do the job.
Wait,
I just had to wait a year, which, by the way, I complained about that for a year.
I'm sure. Well, it's making yourself important again, making sure you remain important. Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes to your point, it's just the competition that's almost stacked against you internally in terms of what big dogs are coming to play, you know, at the table. And it may not just be for capital. It might be for, you know, a strategy or a process or prioritization of, hey, we got to get this initiative done before we can get to this one. But I think the message that came through in that kind of after meeting is really like there still is value to what's happening.
Right.
We just, when we see everything on paper and we're looking strategically at what's going on, we can't make that decision today because there is a workaround that's in place right now.
Priorities. Yeah.
But come back and eventually you'll be able to click. And I think that's another piece of this is not getting discouraged when somebody doesn't see your value or you bump up against bigger competition for those resources at that point that, you know, it's just not your, it's not your day. Mm-hmm. You come back and you wait and you try it again and make sure that the story remains at the forefront to say, hey, this is still a thing. It's still a thing. It's still a thing.
Yeah, no, I was making the snide comment that I, you know, complained about this for the better part of a year before I went back and argued. But really what I did is I met with every leader that had a say in this thing in the time between 1 year and the next. And I made my case for why we needed this to probably to the point of annoyance. And
sometimes that works.
Sometimes that works. A squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yep.
I also did, and I tried to do this in a, not in a snide manner, but sometimes my sarcasm comes out. But every time that something happened that we needed information that would have been in a tool like this, I pointed that out, particularly when we happen to have a data center problem and the CIO goes, well, what about what's here versus there and blah, blah, blah. And we all look at each other. And I'm like, well, we would know the answer to that, but we didn't get our tool. So we're going to have to go do some manual analysis to figure out the answer to that question, which was, we didn't really have time for that. We had some decisions to make. So I try to do that, you know, again, I try to do that not in a sarcastic or snide manner, but I think important to point out that, like, we made some prioritization decisions, and that's what you're getting paid to do. But I'm here to tell you that if you had decided differently, then we would have this.
Right. So now, so on the surface, you know, the request for, in this example, the software is, it's a zero return in that proposal, but when you're able to start demonstrating in real life, hey, I would know this and you'd be saving money right now. That there is financial value somewhere in there, but you can't say, well, 3 months from now, we're going to have a data center issue and it's going to save you this amount of money. But when it happens, you can start totaling that up and saying, hey, between last presentation and this presentation where we're asking for this, we could have potentially saved this amount of money during that time on top of, yeah, it's a zero return, but we could have saved this much.
I think another thing that we don't always, we haven't really talked about in this discussion about making yourself important is the more that you're, the teams that you interact with come to believe that you have, that you understand their business.
Yeah.
And that you understand the principal business of the organization, the more important I think you become as a partner in their eyes, particularly if you start to value the same kind of thing. You have a shared value system. I think the best place I can illustrate this is the first 12 years of my career, I was in the field. I was in the retail organization. I was a security manager and district and group manager, but so I'm running increasingly larger security teams, but I am directly supporting the retail stores. That's where my team is at. That's where I'm at every day. And I'm partnered with a business leader over the stores, just like there was an HR partner there with us as well. And the three of us were kind of the leadership team, right? I feel like, particularly after a couple of years under my belt, I could look at a store the same way that my partner did. I understood what was important to him or her. I reinforced their shared our shared expectations with the store's organization. The stores looked at me in the same way as, hey, this is a district or group level leader coming to visit. I'm going to shape up and I'm going to take this visit seriously and I'm going to give Brian the same respect that I'm going to give to my boss. And I feel like I earned that because I'm part of elevating my role was understanding what was important to the business and looking at things through their eyes and being able to reinforce that when I was out and about in a store. So I'm there to visit. I wasn't going there to visit my team. I was going there to visit the store, and right. My team was a part of that visit.
Yeah. Your focus happened to be a specific area of it, but it didn't take away from a broader view. And I think that's hugely important in terms of those partnerships and kind of related things to that is, and a key piece of that is being authentic about it. Like, it can't just be superficial. Oh yeah, tell me, okay, you cover XYZ, great, you know, and go regurgitate it to somebody else. You have to authentically care about what that is and start to get into the weeds, to your point, knowing what your partner leader would be looking for, what they're interested in, so that you can articulate that and reinforce that. And it almost becomes a united front. And, you know, a lot of times in some of these areas where, you know, like a BC and a DR, where they might be organizationally different in different locations, there's got to be that shared connectivity of what that is. So it's, it's almost a united front that you can speak to the other's business. Because at the end of the day, there's an intrinsic connection there that has to happen for the organization regardless. So you might as well be a united front in that and be able to make your cases in different places.
Well, and I think it works to your advantage too, because then your business partner is looking at your function, security in this case, as an integral part of making his or her business operations successful. Right. And it allows you to drive your own priorities by essentially teaching them what you want them to look at when they're in a store. Like, here are the three or four questions that I want you to ask, or here's the three or four things I want you to look at when you're in. I didn't have to worry about basic physical security stuff after a while because everybody understood that no matter who was coming, they were looking at, like, are the doors locked? Is the truck dock secure? Is the compactor secure? What's in your storage trailers? You know, what's the security team up to? And there were questions that went along with that. But I think it's a force multiplier if you're able to establish that. But the selfish part of it was it elevated my role as a security leader. It elevated the importance of my team's role in the stores because we were viewed as a partner. Our job was to enable the business. It wasn't to
obstruct.
It wasn't to obstruct, right? Like, there's a reason we lock these things. Here's why, and why that's important, why that's part of our value system here of what we do.
Yeah.
But that's part of enabling and protecting your business, not I'm trying to get you in trouble because you didn't padlock a dock door.
Right.
Or whatever.
One, I think, to your force multiplier point, when you have multiple leaders advocating for the same thing, whatever that thing is, the gap or the opportunity that needs to be addressed, it's a lot easier to make the case or to get those resources when multiple people are saying, this is a thing. This is a thing we need to address. Hey, have you guys addressed the thing over in this other area? That speaks volumes. It makes people pay attention to the fact that they're hearing it from different people, even though you're kind of like-minded and situationally, you know, kind of positionally the same in term within mm-hmm. the organization or as a function capability. If you have multiple people saying it, somebody may have credibility with another leader that you don't necessarily have because you haven't had as much interaction, or there's, you know, be real, there's could be history there or something like that. But when somebody else says it, going, oh, okay, yeah, I'll take an interest in that. That force multiplier piece, I think, is a great point in terms of mm-hmm. that's why you share your story. That's why you put yourself out there. That's why you make friends, like we've talked about before. When, you know, when you need a friend,
It's too late to make one. I'm reminded, too, of another little anecdote from my time in the stores that I think is illustrative of something that you just mentioned. I remember having had a high potential leader one time working for me in Boston who was running the hell out of a super difficult store that was a mess when he got there. And, you know, we'd changed the store manager and some other things had happened. And he was doing great. And my boss and I wanted to send him through initial interviews to promote to run a district of his own. So run 8 to 10, 12 stores. And we're in a talent planning meeting. And talent planning meetings were conducted as a big team. So your partners from HR and the stores were all there.
Sure.
And, you know, and we're just as openly talking about store managers as we are, you know, the managers under them, including the security manager and HR manager in the store, which of course had independent reporting relationships. And so these guys were part of my team, and I'm walking through like next level talent. Here's what I think I want to do. And I remember my group vice president goes, hey, you know, like I've met this guy that you're talking about, but like, I've never had a real conversation with him. So I'm going to trust you on this, but I'm part of the interview process. So the next time I'm in the store, we need to make sure he's more visible. So it was an interesting conversation I had with my manager in the store, because what I wanted him to do was make himself important. I wanted him to step up in a visit from essentially the store manager's boss's boss's boss.
Right.
And have an interaction with him. Not because we're trying to get him in trouble, right? But like, I want to put him in front of somebody who's going to interview him and let them have a chance to have a more normal interaction.
Right.
And he was terrified. And now, to be fair, when I was his age, I was kind of terrified of this too.
Sure.
He was terrified. And it was like, well, he doesn't want to hear from me. And I'm like, actually, he's asking to get to know you better, right? So we're going to do two things. You're going to prep two, three, four things that you want to say to him, talk with him about. You're going to run them past me so I can help you get the right things. And then second, you're going to lunch with us, with just us. It's going to be like four of us. You're coming. So I don't want to do that. No, but you need to.
You're right.
You need to, because he wants to get to know you, and this will make interview process easier. But you've got to make yourself important. He's not just coming to the store to visit, you know, with the store manager and that team. You are part of that team. He's coming to see the whole business, and you're an important part of the business. So trust me. And so there were a few social missteps along the way, but he did a great job, and he's gone on to have an incredible career. Probably not due to me, due to others that he's worked with, but it was that interaction. It was making himself important that gained him that visibility. And I don't think he would have done that on his own.
No. And I think that, you know, for me too, personally, that it's a real challenge to try and kind of get over that hump of kind of talking about yourself, talking about your function, making yourself important, you know, doing those things. It can be real intimidating and, you know, scary. But now with the wisdom of age and experience, you know, and just looking at it from just a, you know, even just looking at it from a business standpoint, not even personal pieces of it, putting yourself out there and sharing that story and making these things important to other people, I think we've talked about it quite a bit now, you know, is critical. And so it's, even if you viewed it less about yourself and more about, you know, try to take a view of, hey, this is about my function and our role or our capabilities or our importance within the organization, you should be able to speak to that, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of the personal mm-hmm. components of it. But yeah, I mean, it can be intimidating. It can be scary, but you know, I think if that is the case, it is going to your leader and having those conversations of saying, hey, this is the story I want to share. Did I craft this right? You know, this is what I'm thinking. Hey, I want to go talk to these people because I feel like they have the keys to the doors, you know, to be able to get to these other people or to get to these other functions. So, you know, part of that is being a little bit strategic about who you're talking to and who you're sharing your story and potentially in what order, you know, because sometimes that matters too. But yeah, I think it's important.
That's it for this episode of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We hope you tune in next week. And in the meantime, don't wait for your ticket to the dance. Just show up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.